All right, I am recording and welcome everybody to the, as I call it, the Mutual Admiration Society with myself and Jan Young, who I think everybody who's listening to this knows who Jan is. So Jan reached out to me, which is fantastic because just we could probably consider ourselves competitors or not, but I don't really think so because like there's just too many people to help out there. Why would we be competitors? And so we just got on a Zoom one day and just like let it fly. And I was like, oh, we should have recorded that. And then we got on a second one and they were like, oh, look at it. And then we said, okay, let's find a topic. And I, as most people know, I usually say, let's talk about something that you're passionate about. But Jan, just for the one person that just accidentally hit play on this podcast and started hearing me talk, can you just give a little bit of a background? It doesn't have to be the resume read, but just sort of your background and why everybody loves hiring you for to help them out.
So I am a principal consultant at the Success League, which is what makes us, I guess, competitors, more colleagues, I would
frenemies.
Call it.
Yeah, no, yeah. No, just kidding. No.
Not even colleagues, because peers. I would never put you in the enemy camp ever. It's a boutique customer success consultancy. Been doing that for over a year, maybe a year and a half or so. And before that, for about 5 years, I was doing my own solopreneur consultancy.
Yep.
I've done project management and marketing and a lot of different things, a little bit of product, but I came from entertainment tech. I live in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So what else am I
doing? By the way, the hardest people to please in the world, just ask. 100%.
Oh, my God, the egos. Oh, my God. Which is why I moved out to LA to work at Paramount, and I lasted there for the minimum 2 years back when, you know, people still did 2 years at a job, and I got out as quickly as I could.
Oh, yeah, that's right. People do that.
2 years, almost to the day, I moved over to the tech side, which I've always been a geek. I always
loved. Can I just throw in one thing on the entertainment thing? Is that I remember when I was at Brightcove, I worked with a ton of entertainment customers, and then they would always want to validate, like, oh, you know, we're tough, you know, we're hard to work with, and I would always just say, I just did a year with Viacom managing them. And they're like, you're on board. When can you start? Absolutely.
No, it's the studios. The studios are all screamers.
Oh yeah.
I can calm anybody down because I've had to. You have to walk people off the ledge.
Yeah.
And put them into actual, you know, best practices, because they'll just want to go, you know, nitpick here or there, you know, just have you like jump through hoops.
There's nothing more calming than a nice. There's nothing more calming than a nice Gantt chart, as far as I'm concerned.
All right. Did the entertainment tech stuff. There was a time when entertainment tech was, you know, because I was in it from that moment where I went to business school when the .com thing was going on.
Yep.
When that was the first, you know, big downfall, right? Gosh, try and get a 401k going when all the market does is just keeps going down. Like, as long as you have money to buy when it's at that bottom, but yeah. Oh my God.
And the messaging for those people who weren't around for that was like, yeah, you should never look at your 401k, maybe every 5 years, just look at your 401k. Just not, and don't have those 5 years be 2003 and then 2008. And then
So there was that time when you know, all of the content was just moving over to become digital, and that was cool. Everything was changing all the time. You're always sort of, you know, evaluating your strategies, and I always, and for me, this whole business is about strategy. That's what I love about it. That's what I connect with. And so that was fun. And then all the consolidation started to happen. I mean, even the latest one, Discovery has now bought Warner, you know, anyway, for people who aren't in that business, but you know, I live here, so I know about this stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's crazy, just the consolidation that happens just still daily. And so then if you're moving up the ladder, you know, in companies like that, all you're basically doing is firing people. That is not fun. So then I made the switch over to emerging tech because, you know, for me, it's always about the learning and that sort of thing. So I was really into blockchain, didn't care about crypto, yeah. You know, who cares about the get rich quick stuff? Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, that's
there are very useful applications for blockchain. I did work on a couple of projects.
Yeah. But you know, the what it does to the environment is still kind of, and plus I thought it would be democratic and it would save the world, and it's not really going to do that, you know, details. So then what I was doing, I was working with like all those founders and startups and things like that. And all the entrepreneurs, man, they have such passion, but they think that since they solve their own problem, that now they understand the customer. And I'm always going like, okay, look, you have now a customer of one. That's all you got.
So just N equals one and let it fly, right? Just
Yeah. And so it's just like, okay, so that's how I got right back into the customer experience and customer success route. And then of course found Gain, Grow, Retain during and the rest of the community during the pandemic, and fell in love with all these smart, generous, kind, you know, strategic people. Yeah. And there you go. So that's how I ended up making my way over to Kristen and just focusing on customer success. Awesome. So that's the longest way I've ever talked about.
Okay, so now we're at 2020. No, I'm just kidding. So
like, yeah, right. So yeah. So anyway, so now I focus my time on, I've done a lot of interim VP CS roles. I've done a lot of coaching. We also do a lot of public and private teaching. We have certification for CS leaders, which isn't anything else out there that I've seen for CS leaders. And it's
and really, I'll refer people to that, because my goal is get people, you know, educated, hire that person that's on the verge, player coach, needs to be a director, go to this course, take it. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, because and that's the thing, is what happened was I just fell in love with Kristen and her IP, and then we all get to contribute to it. So what is more fun than that? Plus, like, the interview process was just geeking out about CF. So, you know, sign me up. So I've been loving it and doing that. And then otherwise, yeah, consulting, like the way you do, you know, where you're trying to help people sort of find their, you know, some spot that they want to improve upon in that CS program.
We're here. We need to be there. Yeah. How do we get there? Right.
Yeah, exactly. And just sort of helping, you know, in whatever way makes sense.
Absolutely. All those types of things. You touched on something. There was a slight nerve that we're now going to, I'm going to immediately jab with a knife here.
Good.
We'll try and keep the curses down if you're driving with your kids, which, I mean, I don't know why you'd do that either, but we were going back and forth on some founders and some people out there that are very influential and it might be full of crap. Right.
So. No, I don't think that they're full of it. I think, I don't know.
There was like one or two, and then I found another. There's another one that like there's like a Midwest saying, like, really itches my whatever. But like, I'm trying to feel that really, you know, scratched me the wrong way.
Yeah.
You know, my perspective, and the reason why some of these things really can get me going, is because I always get an email from a client and they're like, oh, should we be doing this? And I'm like, no, like, you're at 5 million and 15 customers. That's what you do when you're at like 200 million and you're deciding which Bugatti to buy, right? Like, so, so anyways, and you have,
and so that is something that I thought was interesting. So you had recently shared, what's
Pablo from Insight.
And so Pablo's post about what, you know, kind of renewals and where that is, you know, based upon the stage of the company. And one thing I really liked about that is that it does happen differently by stages, right? And certainly when you're Series A and all of that, you've got like several different hats on. And so like a CS program is going to do everything from onboarding to renewals to, you know, support, you know, often, you know, because you don't have enough customers, you don't have enough, you know, work, you don't have enough money to hire.
If you hired five distinct roles there, even if you had the payroll, like, cause you know, some Series A customers get a lot of money sometimes. And even if you had that money to spend, if you got the specialists, right, and you hired these specialists, I literally be like, I don't think there's 40 hours worth of work there to do.
No.
And then they get nervous and itchy and oh my God, like, and then it's a flight risk, right? Versus like, hey, we're here at this, here I am taking over, I apologize, but we're here at this stage of the company and there's a little bit of generalism that happens and then people grow and turn into different roles and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and so I was, you know, just looking at kind of what he was talking about. He of course, being on the investor side, he's not thinking about like, what stage or how many years the customers, you know, the company's been around. He's looking at if it's under 30 million, you know, 30 to 100 and 100 plus, right?
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's a good approximation for stage as any. But, you know, but when you think about why those companies maybe still have sales handling renewals versus the CSM or haven't done a whole separate renewals organization under, you know, CS, or if the account manager is handling renewals, well, then you also have to think about like, well, what's happening with the incentives and what they're incentivized to do. Because, you know, I was just talking to a CS leader yesterday and her CSMs will do like these small, you know, like automated renewals practically, right?
But evergreen,
but if it's anything bigger than that, then it goes back over to the salespeople. Except for the salespeople, you know, they're never incentivized to work on the renewals because they're working on the new fish.
They're hunters. Yeah, they're absolutely.
And so they're not incentivized to do that. Or if they are, what they want to do is sell them a lot more so they can make the bigger commission because they live and die by that commission. Well, that isn't what the customer needs. So nobody is incentivized properly. And so of course it's broken.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that early on, it's probably fine to make certain that you know, to train up your CSMs to do it. But you know what there isn't? In RevOps, there's all kinds of help for sales and SDR and BDR and all this kind of stuff, right?
Yep.
In terms of how to sell properly, do those discovery calls, et cetera. But think about it, post-sales is a different motion. No training out there.
No,
no training out there. It is a different sales motion. It's just you have to keep adapting what they have sales do. You keep having to adapt it for the post-sales process for expanding the account.
Yeah.
And so, but anyway, all that to say, like, I know somebody who's basically on the renewals team over at Okta, and it makes total sense that Okta, you know, has a separate renewals group.
Transactional, right? Just bring them in. Yeah.
And if you're dealing with a company that has a really complex, you know, legal and, you know, procurement and all of that stuff, then you need someone who's just spending time getting it through that maze.
Yeah.
CSM is not going to have that time, which is why then you specialize operationally earlier as well.
Yeah.
So what's funny to me is the way that investors will look at just the renewal portion and how that gets separated out and how that travels around. But it's in the context of the overall, all of the responsibilities of a CSM, right? And how, when do you separate out support? When do you separate out, you know, onboarding? You know, well, you do it when you need to.
I know, because I don't have the numbers because every company is different. You can have a product that... is super difficult to launch and is very technical and everything. And you might need a bunch of different resources to do that.
Yeah.
But if you looked at a revenue number, well, what if those things cost like 500? Cause I have a customer, like, they cost 500K for their software and people are paying it, but you've got three customers live. Do I need a full-time CSM? Let's run this through. Cause this is a thing here. You're a brand new company. You've made a bunch of sales. You struggle through the first couple ones, get them implemented, right? They're live now. You've got three. Let's just say you've got three customers live, right?
Are they complex customers? Are they enterprise? Do you have to like dig in across a number of different departments and have a lot of different personas you're working with, or is it pretty simple?
Pretty simple.
So the onboarding is complex.
Onboarding is complex.
The relationship part isn't.
Exactly.
Okay. Well then, yeah, in that scenario, when you have three customers, but you still have new customers coming in,
well, let me ask you,
complex. I would probably have somebody who's focused on onboarding, make certain that that works smoothly.
Yes.
And then I would have someone who's covering support and the strategic, you know, relationship building.
Yes.
However, that's so key. Like at the beginning,
you who's a person that can cover support and also be strategic in the relationship building? I've got an answer.
Well, it's all of these, you know, because then also if they're doing renewals, then do they also have the sales? But, you know, it's probably someone who knows the product well.
Yeah. I mean, this gets back into it just depends. And it's on the situation. You got to make those calls and you might be wrong.
Yeah.
But like, and you got to patch it together. But like for now, it's like support tickets come in. For this particular scenario, in order for the customers to be live, because it's so complex, you know, brought on a very good program manager. So, you know, I don't like to say project manager because that gets into whole like PMP and Gantt chart land, but somebody who can work with a customer to get them live.
Yeah.
You've got, and then there's another technical resource that gets them, you know, over the hoop and stuff like that. And then the PMs will make sure that the support tickets get covered. You know, in the meantime, you know,
certainly one way. I think it always, I mean, you basically, the way I talk about it, because it drives me nuts whenever anybody wants a template for something.
Oh, it's, yeah, you can't do it.
And it's like, a template for what? The template is step one, step two, step three, fill in the blank. You know what I mean? That's as good a template as you're going to get. The point is, what people should be asking for is the foundations. What are the foundations? And if you know the foundations, and if you know what questions to ask, which is all you and I do all day long, right? Then you know, like, okay, then I want to structure it this way.
Right.
You know, because based upon all the various scenarios, you know, and that's why I sort of troll around over on all the different Slack communities, you know, from day to day as well, because, you know, people will ask the types of questions. And then inevitably, though, somebody will say, it depends. Because it does.
I feel seen right now. Are you talking about me?
but we should get some
more detail out of it, right? Yeah. Like let's flesh it out a little bit here.
Yeah. You got to, because I can apply, if I ask some questions, I can apply the foundations and then give you guidance on some ways you might consider. But then it also depends upon sort of legacy and what skills you have in house already.
Right.
Because it's so funny. There was somebody I was talking to, operations reported to sales and CS reported to either like marketing or product or something. Like it was just like this weird sort of like there was no real go-to-market team, like the way it was. And it was just because of the personalities and the skills that were there on the team and what their background was and what they were doing to fill in until they could get the people they needed on board.
And that's actually very common. And I don't disagree with it, but it's also like, this can't go on for too long, right?
No. Yeah. Yeah. Startup life is chaotic. And so you expect a little bit of chaos, but I think we should, for leading to another topic here. Yeah. But I think we want to dig into that whole Chris Hickens post.
Yes. Well, go,
that's what started us up in the first place.
Wind it up here. Here we go.
So the premise is, about a book I haven't read yet. So I have no right really to talk about it in a sense, but still like, we know what the premise
is. You're still like 99% of people on LinkedIn and the internet then. So
No. I think it's important to read the books. I always like to read the books. In fact, you know, anybody who gets on a call with me, I grab from, like, I've got three or four stacks right here and I'm like, oh, do you mean this book? Or do you mean that book? Or look at this book. I love the books. I will stop that. But I do always have a lot of suggestions about books. Anyway, that to say, he's talking about a book. He's talking about Frank Slootman's book. The CEO over at Snowflake, which I love because we're all snowflakes. But anyway, so Amp It Up is the book I haven't read yet. But apparently he's trying to make the case is that you don't need the CS leader and you don't need a CS department, because in our ideal world here, everyone is CS.
And it's like, absolutely. Everybody's all CS, Jan.
Sure. Well, so the thing is, like, first of all, GGR put out a call looking for customer-centric CEOs. And I think that's lovely. I would love to see that list. I just don't have a lot of faith that's a really long list. I just don't. I don't think it is. There's too many people that I'm having to, you know, coach them through like how to get beyond sales as their focus, you know, and too many CEOs who only understand product because, you know, product often, you know, a lot of CEOs come from that.
Absolutely.
And it's like, you know, and also like, you know, Salesforce has this whole funnel that they've come up with, right? And it's almost scientific in terms of how to get the number of sales you need, you know, like what you do with marketing, you know, all the way you know, to like the SDRs and, you know, all the way down to the AEs and like produce the number of sales. We don't have that for CS. And it's clear that we don't have it for CS because now the next thing, you know, while we're barely getting started here and trying to still go around and educate people, we have, you know, good old Frank saying, oh, they don't need to exist at all. And, you know, and why
all the Frank fanboys are going to be like, oh my God, that's a good idea. We should probably get rid of our CS department.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So yeah. Now everybody's going to come on board and say, oh yeah, just, you know, hard times. Let's just act it.
Yeah.
Like, but first of all, like Salesforce created the need for CS anyway, because now you have sales as being hunters. Now, when I first got into CS, I was technically sales account manager, except for my boss had done all of those initial contracts. And so I was always from day one post sales, and then I would do renewals and stuff and sometimes do some new deals along the way. But, and I was incentivized in that way, right? So, but that's not how our sales teams are incentivized. That's not what their job is. Their job is to only hunt, and then they drop it off at your doorstep. And it might be, you know, an ideal customer profile, or it might not, right? How they're incentivized.
And can we have a kickoff tomorrow? That'd be great.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, but I don't know who they are. You've told me nothing about them, and you haven't entered any of the information in Salesforce, so I have zero data. But yeah, anyway, so, you know, but
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So. Yeah, exactly. So, but okay, but going back, so his premise is that you don't need CS because everybody throughout the organization should have some kind of, responsibility for it. But now Jason Lemkin, meanwhile, is writing a post. You can tell I'm like always checking out these posts because I love the conversation and I love the community. But he had one a few weeks ago making the case for a VP of freemium. That you need a VP of free. Yes. And that there's all these reasons. But his main point is if you don't have somebody who's responsible for it, then it lingers and the purpose of it doesn't exist within an organization.
Yeah.
And that's my problem with Frank's book is then if everyone's responsible for it, then no one's responsible for it.
Absolutely. Because then what happens is if I've seen people say, it's not what I'm getting paid for. I'm not getting bonused on retention. I'm like, I'm not going to go fix that customer bug because I don't care. So let's take that to what we're saying here. When times get tough and you've got to do the stuff that you get your bonus and your salary and your performance reviews on, that's nice. That's like mom and apple pie, but it doesn't work in the business world because it gets dropped because it's like every other harebrained thing that comes out of these initiatives with no owners and things like that. So
yeah. I mean, because, you know, kumbaya and all of that, we'd like everyone to just, you know, be a part of this ideal. But when you take a look at what the incentives are, or how are they trained before they got there? Like I was talking to somebody recently who's trying to set up a professional services group. And part of the problem is now you have to have somebody over on the tech side go and touch everything, look at everything, identify like, is this really a 3-day, you know, project, or is this like a 3-week project? Is it a 3-month thing? Like, what is this? Because they need to really be close enough because they have to go and get some dollars off of it, right?
Yeah.
Well, so now the engineer, then they're going to get into it, dig into it, get all of that information, and then they're going to put it to the side and not do anything with it because now they've got the scope and they're going to go and price it. Well, they don't like that. If they're in it and their head's in it, they want to go and get it done.
Right.
But that doesn't get them paid and they're giving away all these services for free. Right. So a big part of that change management, just getting professional services up and running, is to help the engineers that are on the ground who are going to be doing this buy into the idea of why it's good for them and their company to do something that's antithetical to how they've been trained mm-hmm. and all of the legacy behavior that they have, yep. right? And so think about that. So yes, ideally, everybody cares about the customer, but how do you really get the whole organization to come on board and do their little piece of the pie? And then so many things can fall through the cracks. Unless you have a point person who's responsible for the customer, and then you kind of already, that is a CSM and that is a CS group, even if you're calling it something else. You can call it technical account manager. You can say, oh, this is professional services because people only get this if they pay for it. We have paid CSMs and paid CS programs, yeah. you know?
Name account manager, whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and so anyway, that's why that whole thing bugs me. And I'll read the book, but it's going to be hard because, you know, I'm going to want to.
God bless you, because I'm not going to read the book.
Oh, you're not? I feel like it's, you know, you got to be responsible to like, okay, like I don't go and watch like political news that I going to piss me off and keep me up at night. But and then this book will probably. Piss me off and keep me up at night. But I think it's important to read it because we're out there in a world where we need to talk to the CEOs.
Yeah, that's a good point. You read it first and you let me know if it's a vanity project or not. And if you feel
well, it probably is. Isn't every book a vanity project? I mean, you have to like, you know, every company is a vanity project because you have to believe in it enough to take all those hours to get what you think that you have to offer the world out on paper yeah. in a comprehensive, cohesive. Yeah. That's hard. Like it's got, you gotta something's gotta push you.
Oh man. And didn't you actually do some research and find out that Snowflake actually does, what are they? I mean, how do
they technical account managers?
They're technical account managers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not the QA developer. Randomly yeah. reaching out and saying, hey, we'd yeah. like to renew your contract.
Right. And so like, you know, and so there's got to be someone who, and then, you know, but also when you take a look at it, who is their end user? You know, what is that persona? Well, it's a bunch of other tech geeks and, you know, which although I've never been trained to be an official tech geek, I like to be, you know, I love that world. So I'll count myself in. I'm not saying anything bad about anybody if somebody thinks of it that way. But anyway, so you're talking to a bunch of people who are highly technical. So who are you going to have talking to them? Highly technical people who like to talk to others because you have to at least talk to them.
Yeah.
And who otherwise are responsible for that business relationship. Okay, so you can call it a technical account manager or you can call it a CSM. If it's going to be an account manager, then you need to make that transition to caring about the success of that customer, which is the problem in fact, I was talking to somebody recently who's taking a team from account manager over to CS. Mm-hmm. And what is the transition in the mindset that you need to do? Right. So you can call them account managers, but there's still a different mindset.
Yeah. On that point, like I've got a client and this thing about we were discussing earlier, well, then who does the renewals? And then the salesperson yeah. like, oh, I'll do the renewals as a good person. Like she's like, awesome. Right. And like, oh, I'll yeah. do them. I'm like, are you going to do an EBR? Are you going to set 90-day goals and keep going back to them? And, you know, on and on, you know, the routine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
I'm like, oh, no, I don't want to sign up for that.
Not in the confrontational thing.
I'll just deal with the paper and get the comp.
Yeah. But I'm like, you've got a big number to go get, right? Are you going to, you know, when time, you're looking at your calendar and there's a new sales thing that comes up and that's when you're supposed to be doing EBR, I know which meeting happens and what doesn't, right? And so that's like, the exact goal? I'm like, oh, here we go. So. Anyways, yeah. I really, so you can tie this together. The Amped Up book is basically saying all for one, it's a community thing. We'll take care of this. Although in actuality, that's not what's happening. And then the other post is basically saying, if you don't have a direct owner, it will fall to crap and everybody will hate it, right? Because from that post from, was it from Jason? That like everybody hated the free product. Right.
Yeah.
Everybody got confused by it. Marketing hated it. Support hated it. And then shortly after he left, it was immediately hung out, you know, put behind the barn.
And if you think about it, that's death too. No one understands death. No one understands the value of free. No one understands.
That's because it's just, it's because the initials we chose, Jan. It's CS. It's.
But, you know, I mean, but when you think about it though, like, you know, that's where, like, you don't, your company will not get the value of a CS program or a free program, you know, if free, you know, in terms of how you go to market the free.
Yeah.
If you don't understand what that value is and what it achieves for your company, right? Now, if you do understand it, then you're all in and you will make someone accountable for, you know, that post-sales part of the customer journey. And you would also make someone, you know, responsible for free, because I thought that Jason made a really good point about that, is that you learn a lot of things about your product. You build your product so it can be self-serviced, you know, and that is really valuable, you know, because then everybody has the opportunity to do the things that make sense in the way that they want, right?
I just have to raise the flag though. Like my purview is enterprise B2B SaaS, and I do not see a lot of self-service products in that regard. So whenever I see self-serve and customer-led growth, product-led growth and stuff like that, I just basically kind of, be fair, push it to the side, because I just don't, it's not the customer's idea.
So what I would say though is there are, if nothing else, there are trainings that there are ways in which like that can be self-serviced for the people who it makes sense for, right? Yeah. Like there are end users or champions who are in the product, using the product, and the way that they're going to learn it best is if you have like guides, you know, coming up and showing them the way through and that sort of thing.
LMS or the certification
program. And so you can call that self-service. There are times when they need to just figure out how to do something, you know, and they don't want to like wait 24 hours to hear back from the support team, right? And so having that kind of stuff available to them so they can figure it out easily is, you know, is a good thing to do.
Absolutely.
There are sometimes, even with complex onboardings that are B2B, there are parts of it that, like, especially if you're working with, you know, and your personas are like IT, you know, or something like that, they want to just read it, get the information, go and like implement it. And then they'll check in with you. It's like, oh, okay, well, if you need this done by Friday, but I can't because I've got to do these other things. So they'll coordinate with you, right?
Yeah.
But they need to go off and do their thing. They just need the information so they can go off and do their part, right? Yeah. So there's a lot of things like that I think self-service is gets a bad rap because it's not always just end-to-end self-service that you necessarily need to employ. And then the other thing, just thinking about the personas, there are people who, like if your end users are like salespeople, time is money, being on the phone, that sort of thing, that is money. Yeah. So if you're trying to do everything for them by calling them up, what are you doing? You're never going to reach them. That's you're taking money away from them. That's not a good customer journey, right? And so you want to make things easy for them. And in that respect, so like that's all I would say about that.
No, that's a good, as I said, it's a good perspective there, that there's learnings from those foundational, enter your credit card here, and then you're good to go. And
because we're not all PLG.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, product-led growth has its place.
Yeah.
But it's not all that, you know.
Jan, I heard you've got a meeting coming up, so I want to be cognizant of that. So I do like to wrap everything up with, and it sounds like book reading, but I'm not quite sure. Like what was your pandemic hobby or the thing that you love to do when you're not geeking out in Slack forums about customer success?
I love getting on like the Zoom calls, I guess. It's really it's bad. Say
baking bread, hiking.
So I like doing pickleball.
Oh, that's my new sport. I'll bring my racket out to Kansas.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's awesome. Yeah. That wine tasting, hiking.
Yeah.
I just came back from also doing, my sister lives on the little lake and we got to go kayaking.
Oh yeah.
That But I am a wimp when it comes to kayaking. I'm not doing like the rough waters and stuff. Like I like the smooth water.
Tranquil, do some yoga. I hear you. Absolutely.
But yeah, so there's that. So, but yeah. And then obviously I like to, geek out about CS. That is, but my husband actually keeps me fairly well balanced in that regard. He reminds me what time of day it is, and are you ever going to come downstairs from the office? It's like
I'm familiar with that sentiment. Absolutely. So let's do this. I know we'll do this again, and we'll also spend all next week geeking out on CS. So I'm gonna
I'm looking forward to
stop record. We'll wind down, and I'll make sure you get to your next meeting. So thanks so much.
That sounds great.